Well, good evening. Welcome to this live stream on the 23rd of September, 2025. Martin North here from Digital Finance Analytics. Great to see you on the live stream tonight. Thank you very much for spending some of your Tuesday evening with us. Of course, I've got Edwin ready to come in just a second. Just before I do that, I will just remind you that we're not providing specific property or financial legal advice. It's a general conversation only. We moderate the chat, but feel free to throw your questions and comments in. And if there's a particular question you'd like thrown at us, use that Walk the World. That'll get it into my queue. Make sure I see it. And also enable Super Chat, which means that if you want to get your question on the list, you can do that. Or indeed make a contribution to what we do around here. Greatly appreciate those who support us. It really makes a huge difference. We don't just profit. We do this because there's a really, really important conversation to be had. Let me bring Edwin straight in. Edwin, hello. A Monday rant on a Tuesday, eh?
On a cold, nippy Tuesday night.
Yeah, well, great to have you on. And I don't know whether you saw the thumbnail, but I actually made this one the other day with houses falling into the Sydney Harbour. I felt that was appropriate somehow. We've got so much stupidity going on at the moment. All the migrants, of course, coming in, and property prices bubbling high. All the government intervention. So I thought it was a good opportunity to have a bit of a chat about what's going on. And also there's something else I want to cover in today's show. I'm also going to run a special live stream on Thursday with one of our other channel members, Chris Bates, who, of course, has a particular interest in the same subject that we're going to talk about today, which is the question of the first-time buyers and how they work. And then next week, I've got B Wright coming on because he's written some very nice stuff on the first-time buyer trap, because I do think there is a first-time buyer trap. So we're going to get into that today as well. But I thought just before we get out on the rant, I would just share a little bit. Over the last few days, we've had building work here, so I went away, and it was quite convenient because it's my birthday recently, so I've turned the big 70 now, which is a bit of a shock. But I went down. We had some nice walks. This is just where I was staying close by. And then, this is the local red stuff down on the cliffs. And then I climbed a hill. I always have to climb a hill on my birthday. So I went up to what's called the Frogstone, which is a rather nice area down on the south coast, and had a lovely walk around there with the dogs. So that was lovely. And come back refreshed and ready to do more battle on the property sector. Edwin, your take on where we are, I think, is quite interesting. You did a show or a post on Twitter quite recently, and you basically were warning people about what you're seeing.
There are two things. There are two sides to the coin. One is what the government wants us to hear and listen to and believe is going to happen, and there's the other side, which is what actually happens on the ground at grassroots level. And we can see that based on the research that we do, the people that we're assisting to get into the market, and we're able to talk to quite a number of agents all across the Sydney region and in the outskirts of the Sydney region as well. So, and we're able to see how this whole notion of the grants, the subsidies, the grants, the gifts, the bribes, the trickery, and everything else in between, how it all actually works and what it actually does to the market. And you can see it on a blow-by-blow basis, more evident this time around than before. Before, it used to take a bit of time before you saw the rise and before you saw how people would take advantage of these grants, whereas now there's so much FOMO out there that people are just basically, the post that I did that you referred to was in relation to the video that I did there in the YouTube channel, in the Just Think One YouTube channel. And that's, how desperation has basically surpassed or gone beyond, gone past the due diligence. So people are foregoing due diligence just to get in the market. And that is a scary point in anyone's property purchasing journey to be in, Martin, where you're actually just going to, the epitome of FOMO. People are just going willy-nilly, taking the the so-called building reports before you buy reports, taking them at verbatim and taking the their enemy, the opposition, at the word, as if they're there to help them along. And that is alarming. That really is alarming, Martin, because you're we're not going to the aftermath of what's actually playing out now is going to be witnessed for many 6 months down the track to 12 months down the track when, as I said, when you start foregoing due diligence, proper due diligence on homes, and you're paying premium and above just to get in the market, and it's going to cost you an extra 10 to 15 to 20% to rectify the issue that you overlooked because you wanted to get in the market or because of the pressures around you, family-wise, the need, whatever the pressure around you, noise, family encouragement, and so forth. And it's going to be devastating for a lot of young people moving forward because of the choices that they've been forced to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your point about being forced is actually very strong, and certainly in my one-to-one conversations over the last few weeks, again, I'm finding a lot of people really caught in the headlights here. Listening to what the government is saying and saying, well, 5% deposit is all you need. That means that you can get in the market quicker, et cetera, despite the fact that, of course, the Productivity Commission and everybody else who's watching the industry says, well, you just put prices up. There were people who would have bought anyway. They're just going to buy slightly quicker, but it doesn't really help the large cohorts who could never get in the market. They're not going to still get in the market. So it's targeting the wrong sector. And the other point, of course, is all the research shows that when you actually make it easier to get into the market, what you do is put prices up. The home builder story in Western Australia, when they actually threw the extra money in, prices magically went up, particularly the bottom end, by the amount of the additional home builder grant. So it shows you that there's no net sum benefit. A few will pile in. But then the other point is there's such a small choice for many people who are actually now trying to get into the market that they then cut corners. They cut corners on the surveys, as you say. They perhaps buy property that's further out, which means they're going to be traveling a lot more than previously, which means that the costs of commuting, tolls are much bigger than people thought about. And then, of course, you've got this other problem, which is that with the 5% deposit, the government's hoping that prices will go on bubbling higher, and that clearly is one of the reasons why they're doing it. But if prices did turn, then you've got very significant risk of getting into negative equity and all those things that follow if things go the wrong way. So there's much less protection. So, you've got to understand, and this is what I say when I talk chat with people, is the government has an agenda. The government agenda is not necessarily to help the purchasers. The government agenda is to make more transactions happen because they get stamp duty, keep prices high because they want the wealth effect and all of those things, and keep the builders and the construction sector happier, although they still want more government support than currently. And when you actually stand back and think about it and think about the journey that we've been on with regard to property over the last 2 or 3 years, with interest rates, of course, rising. Well, you would have expected prices to ease back, but they didn't. Why didn't they? Because effectively the government just threw more money and more money into the system. They're still doing it. And the question is, well, who is actually taking the risk and bearing the cost of these home buyer programs? And the answer is taxpayers. And remember, of course, that if prices were to fall, the government is now a quasi-lender's mortgage insurer, which means that effectively taxpayers stand to lose potentially if it plays out, and that's the real problem. Let me try this.
Well, Martin, you say we talk in hypotheticals. We talk about the ifs, but I'm going to say that there will be certain types of properties that will, And it's been proven over and over again, regardless of how heated the market gets in terms of our prices going up. You've got certain types of properties that do come back, and after a period of time, you are able to buy them a lot cheaper than what people bought them 5, 6, 7 years ago. And your high-rise developments are a classic example. So what you've got here is, as I've said many months ago, is the government's looking to ways, and they've got to find ways to corral and to, again, encourage people into buying into these high-rise monstrosities and new developments. But whereas people really want, what they really want is a home on a block of land, which was the epitome of the great Australian dream. Now the government's corralling people and coercing people to go into strata complexes, preferably, in their opinion, the high-rise development, because then everybody gets a feed. The local government gets a feed, the state government gets a feed, and the federal government gets a feed. And that is the end game. That is the end game. What keep on ranting on about, and that is because the all levels of government are junkies, and their drug is the impost or the taxes, or stamp duty and everything else on the way through. And they've got to keep that machine. They've got to keep that drug pumping through their veins. Otherwise, what else is there to keep the economy afloat? So there are, look, I will say that they're, making a decision to go a little bit further out to get established in a home. That's something, a sacrifice that I would say to a lot of young people, a lot of people that are wanting to get into the market. Well, that's a better sacrifice to make than make a than make a than be faced with the reality that you bought into a two-bedroom, $950,000 apartment in Rouse Hill, and 5 years down the track, it's only worth $750, and your strata levies have gone from $3,000 to $6,000, and you've got all sorts of issues to go along with it. People, because at the end of the day, it's the land that goes up in value. Buildings depreciate. Land appreciates, and then if you look at other subdivisions, and you've got the subdivisions or the well, which the governments are also trying to promote, your infield in the southwest regions and the west of Sydney and northwest regions as well. So where you've got these monstrosities, these big homes. Well, I say big, I mean generally in general terms. Taking up most of the land envelope, and the land is only 230 square meters, and they've got them piled in historically, where these lands were subject to all sorts of natural disasters, where now insurances in some areas are wanting upwards of $15,000 per annum to get flood coverage. And if you don't have that, if you don't want to pay that, you still can get your house insured, but you're not covered for flooding. And guess what? It almost seems like over the last 5 years, we've had the one in 100 flood every year for the last 5 years. That's where we are. And so what we're witnessing on the ground is that push and that rush to take out those older style homes in the Sydney region, in the outskirts of the Sydney region, where you and I have been talking about how very soon within the Sydney region, in more established areas, we're not going to have home under $1 million, probably more than likely by the end of the year. There won't be such a thing in the Sydney region.
No, and that's exactly. And of course, we're seeing people struggling. And in fact, Steve, thank you very much, Super Chat, Steve. Really appreciate that. And as I showed you a little while, who was talking about in the world of the bubble, what the kids do, and the answer is it's very tough. And my observation is that if you think about the Australian economy, and this slide, I think brings that to bear quite nicely from Adam Crichton. The value of Australia's coal and gas exports predicted to plummet by 50% over the next 5 years, according to Treasury. Well, that didn't sound good from the economic point of view, although the markets didn't really react, which I thought was also quite interesting. But the point is that the economic foundations of Australia are actually pretty weak at the moment. And, you know, the housing juggernaut continues to effectively get more and more momentum, whilst other parts of the economy looks more and more weak. So that's a problem. But when you actually look in detail at what it means that youngsters are finding it harder and harder to find a way into the property market unless they, you know, either mortgage up to the gills plus and or buy further out and or buy property that needs a lot of work, all of which have significant consequences. So the thing to understand, I think, Edwin, is that this is not just a happenstance. This isn't just something which is, you know, nobody's in control. The government's made decisions over the last few years which has led us to this point. And I could itemize them from the looser lending standards for the banks, the high migration, the partnering up with the building and construction sector and the build to rent sector, all of those things. There's a whole bunch of other things. And then, of course, the, you know, the latest incentive programs, et cetera, et cetera. And in the meantime, the government, on one hand, is doing all that, but on the other hand, is actually raising the amount of debt in the system, and that means that more and more taxpayer money has to go to fund the debt that's in the system to be able to keep pumping. So we've got something fundamentally structurally wrong in Australia. And by the way, it's not just Australia. I'd say it's the same with the UK and New Zealand, et cetera, et cetera. In other places too, although New Zealand recently saw property prices fall. Why? Because migration was dialed back. So that might tell you something important. So we have a structural issue. And then what you have is you've got this sort of massive, it's noise. It really is noise at the moment between those who are in the NIMBY camp. You know, you should let build high rise wherever, and those who are actually saying, well, hang on a moment, maybe that isn't the right way. And so there was this slide from the AFR recently. They did a poll and they said they should force NIMBY councils to build more homes, say readers. So it's the readers of the AFR. Oh, and this article said that, you know, you need to actually take the planning battles forward in places like Mossman and Neutral Bay, for example, you know, and Victoria's going to take over the rezoning and basically are going to tell the councils what to do because they need these homes built. Or indeed, then the North Shore, they're talking about the zoning changes. You know, if you can't build high rise, there's no way forward. All of those things are there. And so that there's a sort of a NIMBY versus not battle going on. That's the first point. And then the other point is this spruiking that's going on. And I just am amazed how again and again and again we get the same spruiking going on. So, you know, the latest spruks were places like, well, Stradbrook's the way to go. You know, South Stradbrook is top of the list. This is according to PropTrack. I'm amazed that PropTrack allows their data to be used like it is in these articles. Or here another one, South Australia's most tightly held suburbs, and again it's PropTrack. Or this one here, which is looking for cheap homes. Now all of this is just wall to wall stuff, right? And it's about eyeballs, it's about clicks, it's about trying to get people to actually go and read some, you know, spend time looking at this stuff. But again, you've got to understand the agenda here. This is done with the full blessing of these various online portals and what have you, who are directly and intimately connected with the real estate sector, directly in some cases. So they've got an interest which is not necessarily aligned to their readers. So you put those things together and you begin to realize that as an, you know, prospective purchaser of a property, you're up against more than just finding a place. You're up against you know, these sort of massive forces coming from the property sector, from the journalists, I put that in inverted commas, and then of course the government. So it's a very unfair battle that we're in.
And it goes back to what we were discussing, like even last year, where I said that developers were sitting on their hands waiting for the government to basically put their hand in the pocket in order to guarantee that they were for them to build, and they were going to be guaranteed profit at the end of the build. Otherwise, they're not going to do anything. So in order to do that, you've got to build the demand. And to build the demand, you're basically going to make the established homes, established areas, go up in value so much that anybody else that wants to come into the market is not going to be able to come into the market because they're priced out. So the only other option, in all the narratives are pushing psychological, what would you call that? The mine information to just pushing that everybody must own their own property. So what's the option for those that are left behind is the strata complexes in your high-rise developments to get that machine going in order to subsidize the government welfare. Because that's what it is. Because you've got committee after committee, you've got think tanks after think tanks, and you've got to fund those. And the thing that funds those is the property transactions. What we are hearing and what we're talking to agents on the ground, and that is that this, what many believe, that I was hopeful that it would happen as well. I mean, was hopeful to help for us to help our clients that are looking at buying, but there are many parts of Sydney, in the Sydney region, that the numbers are not coming on as strong, or even they're very, very weak, as a matter of fact, in terms of listings on market, in comparison to the previous years, where in some suburbs you would get, at this time, beginning of the spring selling season, you would get 15, 17 listings in one suburb. I'm talking about small suburb. Currently, there's five. Another one that would get 9, 12 listings would be your listing numbers to go into the spring selling season. There's two. So this is the pressure. And like you said, Martin, like what we've been saying for a very long, it's not just, you can't just look at one point, and you can't just focus on one issue. You've got to look at all the collaborative issues, and put them all together in order to understand what is really happening. But the governments won't do that, because it doesn't benefit them. And the solution is to not talk about the immigration policies, not talk about the fact that the costs of construction, energy costs are going up, therefore it's making cost of construction a lot more expensive, because we're not manufacturing, and there'll be less and less manufacturing that will actually happen here, to the point where a lot of people sort of think, well, so what? I mean, it's only a small item that's used in a build, but it's a small item that's used many hundreds of times across the build. And then when you extrapolate that across all the buildings, I mean, it's a lot. And for something to go from $1 to $1.50, it adds a lot. I mean, if everything else increases in price, like you and I have been monitoring the prices, and we've been talking about it since 2020, that was going to impact the construction industry, and here we are, and they still haven't gone backwards. And then you've got the icing on the cake, and that is, once developers and builders get a taste of this high cost sales or prices for the sale of their developments, they're not going to want to go backwards. They're not going to want to charge less. People think that, that we're going to go back to, we're going to drop 15, 20% in material costs. They're not. They're fixed. Bricklayers aren't going to want to go back to the $1.20 that we were paying 3 years ago to lay a brick. Currently, they're at $3.50, $3.75. All these sorts of things, all these increases, certain trades or certain laborers, they pay them less, but at the end of the day, they're still going to bill the end consumer the same amount because that's how it works. So that's the unfortunate. And whilst we're feeding this beast and we're having less properties on the market and there's less transactions, they've got to ramp up that narrative in order to get the younger minds focus on I've got to own a property, I've got to own a property. And we go back to remember the stories that you and I were talking about as what they were doing in China 3 years ago, where your friend, if you had a friend that could co-sign the mortgage documents, they'll give you the loan. If you had, so basically you go out there and be a friend, and we made a joke that sooner than later, you can get your pets to co-sign the mortgage documents, and that's how easy it was going to be in China in order to keep that bubble happening. And the same things, the same pushes, not as dramatic as what they're doing in China, but we've got some similarities where there was the push of co-join investors and property owners, and I mean, which was always it's always fraught with issues moving forward. So you've got these grants, you've got these subsidies, you've got these bribes, you've got these whatever you want to call them, as I said, and then now you've got the rebirthing of the bank of mum and dad as well, because as property prices all but rise go up in a rising tide. So you've got mum and dad tapping into their equity to support the youngsters because they want to keep them close by to where they've been living all their lives. So you've got so many issues happening all at once, and trying to navigate through all these issues for I would honestly hate to be a first-time home buyer with no guidance out there, because there's so much noise and so much disruptions, and so many want to grab that what do you call it? So many want to grab the money that they're holding and dragging them here and there, and then on top of that, your favorite saying, Martin, this is the time where all the lemons come out and gets old.
Yeah, I think it was last week I talked about the auctions, auctions and lemons coming together quite nicely. I had a few people react to that, saying, "Yeah, you're right. We see some real big rubbish on the auction story." Now, just I wanted to bring up this slide. This is really, I think, quite fascinating because it shows you that there are people trying very hard to convince high density living is the way to go. So this article came out: Sydneysiders living the high life in high density neighborhoods. And that, again, they are really pushing this really, really hard at the moment. Now, I'm sure there are some people who enjoy the high rise living, et cetera, and there are some very nice high rise properties around. But a lot of the stuff that's being built at the moment is not high quality high rise. It is being built down to a price. And I was talking to a builder the other day, Edwin, who made the point that when you start building up, the costs per square foot goes through the roof. And even if you put another six stories on the top, you've actually got to put more foundations in at the bottom to make it work. So you don't actually necessarily get a higher return for a bigger high rise, which I think is quite interesting. I sort of automatically assume that the marginal cost would go down, but no, because you need more car parking space, you need more levels to go down. So actually, the construction sector are finding it quite difficult to be able to make it all work, unless of course you are doing the build to rent. Now, of course, the build to rent, you get that wonderful tax break. So guess what? Some of those big international investors are now seeing this as a way of helping with housing affordability, not, but actually putting a big investments into programs that will actually build high rise for rent But actually, they're quite well specced because they actually think they'll get a better return for those. So the government's paying for those to happen as well. So that's a real problem. So really, we have made no progress at all on the gap of affordability. And in fact, everything is saying that incomes are still under pressure. I don't know whether you saw the HILDA data. I'm going to have a bit of a rant here just for a second. The HILDA data is one of these things that comes out every year. This is the household survey from the Melbourne Institute. And it was interesting when this was reported. I don't know whether you saw it, but HILDA data started by saying the retiring renters are Australia's new underclass. So if you don't own a property, if you're in the rental sector, you've got a problem. So that was their sort of main headline from the report. But when you look at it, and it's worth looking at what they do. So just to highlight the HILDA report, which is the Household Income and Labour Dynamics in Australia report, waves 1 to 23, dated 2025, but this is data between 2001 and 2023. So it's at least a couple of years old. And then, very interestingly, and this is fascinating, in this report they say all the statistics represent estimates for the Australian population, but the HILDA survey underrepresents immigrants arriving in Australia after 2011. So that's a really interesting observation. So it's distorted. And then they actually came out and said, well, financial stress in 2023, 1 in 8 Australians reported 2 or more indicators of financial stress, like inability to pay bills, skipping meals, or seeking financial help. Pressures on single-parent households were there as well. Poverty in single-parent families was there too. And economic impacts on gradients was also. But this is the interesting stuff. You can see here that the equivalized income by family type fell in most categories, no surprise there perhaps. And also, if you look at the by region, you can see there that pretty much all regions had the same story. And here, this is the stuff from the conversation. So Roger Wilkins was one of the HILDA co-directors. And Australians are losing more of their income to tax than in decades, the new report shows. So guess what? They actually showed that pretty much the average tax rates for persons aged 15 and over, like different categories, pretty much everybody's tax has gone up. The over 75 is less so. But, you know, everybody else is paying a whole lot more, and the average is over over 15 and over. The average is a lot higher. So we are paying a lot more for governments who are effectively not doing much. Now, what was interesting was that in the reports discussing HILDA, the issue of this taxation problem was hardly covered. The impact of not having the migration statistics appropriate was not covered. And the third point that nobody picked up, as far as I could see in the press coverage, was this HILDA data is at least 2 years old before it starts. So guess what? They just went to town on selected little pieces of information. And this is another example of misinformation or disinformation from the mainstream, who, frankly, didn't bother to read anything more than the press release, is my estimate of what's happening.
As you said, then you've got the information itself is then distorted because they're not putting in all the data that would make a very significant, of a different significant view of things. Likewise, you get the same thing with the property industry in the information that gets put out. And there's very little coverage of one of the really high-end properties that don't even get a bid. I mean, they're just sort of, we don't want to know about that. Anything that sells for 20-30% above the reserve gets high coverage and all those things. So, but why, we go back to the why and the reason as to the why, and that is because we need to corral and push people into the mortgage, the death trap, for because that is the highest form of taxes that you're going to be paying. So you pay taxes on the way in, you pay taxes on the way through, ownership of the property, and then you pay when you sell at the end as well. So it's a commodity that's, that's what, it's an $8.7 trillion dollar industry. So why not? And then obviously if sales start to slump, then advertising revenues on REA and Domain also start to falter, and the shareholders are going to start jumping up and down. So it's, you're, we're in a drum, and everybody's beating the drum on the outside, and ones that are trying to get in the market are inside and trying to decipher what's right or what's not right, in order to make reasonable, logical decisions. But unfortunately, emotion carries many away and into the trap that is, as I was sharing earlier on before the show with you, Martin, is that it's over the last week or two, we've what we've come to know, through the agents, what the reasons why they tell us that certain properties are being sold. It's alarming the amount of properties that we've inspected over the last 2 weeks, that the people that are selling, that the reason why they're selling is because of a divorce and or a separation. And a lot of it also comes back to well, it's anecdotal evidence, but the majority of these homes of separation after a renovation when they recently purchased as well. And that is because they purchased the wrong property. They found that they've got, that they bought with issues that they should have been more observant about, but they weren't. And then they find out that that they're forced into a renovation that prematurely in some cases, that they're forced to sell it. And at the end, it's not only the sale of the principal place of residence, but it's also the separation of a lifelong relationship that's just gone sour and bitter because of the costs, and their real costs. Just families going different ways, and it's sad. And this is where you don't, unless you're on the ground, unless you sort of see what we see, and unless we have the conversations that we have with so many agents, and that it's a little bit hard or very difficult to fathom what goes on out there in the real world. And this is the aftermath. This is the one of the repercussions of these so-called gifts and what it does. And as I said, it's, you can see the rises in the other people are outbidding each other even before the auctions, the day of the auction, and the properties are just going up, 5-10% within a matter of weeks because of the FOMO. And there's a lot more in the sidelines waiting for the 1st of October to get in, and a lot of these markets that would otherwise be prime markets for first-time buyers to step in to get into the first run of into the property arena. There is the number of listings are down to one third or even less than a third, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But it's all, as you say, it's all orchestrated to then bring the people to back to the focus of, hey, maybe buying off the plan is not such a bad idea. Because don't forget, when you buy off the plan, you have to pay your stamp duty on or before 3 months of exchange of contracts. So you're paying your stamp duty well in advance of you getting the key to your apartment. It may take the developer 2, 3 years, 4 years to hand over the keys to you before you've paid your stamp duty, well in advance. Like I said, on or before 3 months.
Absolutely. And I saw a question there. 1 October, what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about the fact that the new government scheme for first-time buyers comes in from 1 October. They brought it forward from the start of next year. And you just need a 5% deposit. There's no cap now on the number of people who could go for it. So essentially,
I can't hear you, Martin. I think you must have muted.
Sorry. My apologies. Yeah. Problem there was the bins were collected, so I just turned it down, and I've got to turn you back on again. The point there is, Edwin, that the whole story here is really, you know, very, very unsatisfactory. I was just answering the question, why 1 October? Why are we talking about 1 October? And this, we're just talking about the fact that 1 October is actually when the new scheme comes in from the government, the enhanced first-time buyer scheme, 5% deposit. And what that means is that anybody can, as a first-time buyer, effectively get government support. They're providing the lender's mortgage insurance effectively, which means that in theory it's easy, but as we said earlier on, it's chasing prices higher and it's going to be creating a huge amount of potential issues later. So that's just to clarify the question I saw in the chat there. Now, just as I want to sort of move the conversation forward, I don't know whether you saw this, but this was quite fascinating. This was an article talking about what was going on in a, Warwick Farm commuter car park, which allows people to park for free before catching a train to the station. But actually, several stories now are actually where the homeless are living, and they want to deep clean after the homeless were evicted. Now, it's interesting that they said the Liverpool Council said there were about 2,500 people who were homeless in the Liverpool Council area in 2021. The rate had risen substantially since the pandemic. We're seeing people who are experiencing homelessness for the first time. We've had dual income families come through who are unable to pay the rent because rents are so extortionate in Sydney. It can really happen to anyone. So that's sort of one angle on this. And I think this is, significant. And again, not well reported. A lot of people sleeping rough. And this other one, which was another interesting observation here about on the Gold Coast, you're just down the road from, quite a lot of high rise. You've got people living out there. And again, the homelessness issue is one that is not actually getting sufficient coverage, in my view, in the current conversations that are going on, because it's inconvenient, of course, and they want to sort of tidy up the mess and move people on. But actually, it's a big deal. And I keep coming back to this issue again. The census that's coming up, I wonder whether they're going to find people who are living in tents and, other informal arrangements, and whether they'll be captured in the census or whether they won't, because I don't believe necessarily that the true story on homelessness is being reported in the mainstream at all. And it comes right back to these same issues. The consequences of all of the problems of housing affordability and the difficulty of being able to get in and to buy something has downstream consequences. You've got a lot of people who probably will never aspire now to own a property. That creates huge issues in old age if you have to continue to rent into old age as well. So these are really big structural issues. And I come back again to the fact that the government is not actually thinking about this holistically. They're blaming the states for not building enough. The states are blaming the councils for the NIMBYism. So it's, and in the meantime, more taxpayers' money is being poured in. And of course, the consequences also is that we're seeing quite a few suburbs, frankly, being destroyed. So this was one that I thought was quite interesting. The demolisher's hammer falls. Before it falls, the historian's shutter clicks, so he's recording some of the old style houses, the stuff that you wouldn't look past previously. This is now rare, and you've got to document it. Or this one here, another example of an 11.45 million home destined for demolition. I don't know what's going on. So there's just, wherever you look, it's crazy, right? So the property story is a crazy story. And again, you're in the situation, if you are a prospective purchaser and you're trying to figure out how to make sense of the senseless, it's really, really tough. You keep coming back to the emotion aspect. I do think there is a lot of emotion here because, having someone to live is such a critical part of being human. And yet it seems to be more and more difficult for people to actually find a way to do that. You also mentioned the Bank of Mum and Dad, and I'm seeing that in my statistics. Again, because of the recent uptick in property, that means that the parents have a bit more equity. They can actually provide money for their kids, et cetera, et cetera. Not exclusively, but what it means is if you are in a sector of the society where there is intergenerational wealth that you can actually tap into, then you get a chance to get on the property rung. But if you're not, if you don't have that, you won't. And that creates this bigger bifurcation. And by the way, the final point in all of this, how much public sector housing is being built? Close to zero. It's still very, very low. And whilst the buy to rent story is, well, you got to actually provide some affordable rents in the schemes too. Look at the number and look at what affordable rent is. It's not actually affordable to the ordinary people as well. So again, wherever you look, it's just gone completely off the rails. So I don't know what you think, Edwin, but it seems to me that there is a deliberate policy here, a deliberate set of strategies that is leaving people, desperate and hopeless and homeless. And really, there is very little interest from those in government who actually should be taking an interest in this. I don't know what we do about it, short of, saying, well, you know, whoever we vote for next has got to have a proper homeless strategy, because that doesn't seem to be something that neither major party has at the moment. Mind you, of course, you could say the Conservative side of politics is pretty much falling apart. It's not really a coalition now. It's sort of shards of different opinions. So that's not, it doesn't help. And the Greens have gone off the boil dramatically as well. And of course, they failed to get elected despite their rental strategies. So I don't see anything on the horizon that is going to change the trajectory, which means three things. One, prices will continue to rise. Two, people will be more indebted. And three, homelessness will continue to rise.
In between all that, Martin, you've also got a lot of issues that we're going to start seeing more and more. I mean, as early as yesterday, I was made aware of our house in Brentwood for the reason of trying to get extra income. The house owner decided to set up little kitchenettes inside the bedrooms and room let. The budget accommodation style. And now there's a major dispute with the insurance company because the house caught on fire. So the insurance company is trying to ascertain whether or not they're going to cover based on the overcrowding. No, I don't suspect it's more so the overcrowding, because it's a 6-bedroom home, as much as it's going to be. That matter is going to be determined on, whether or not the kitchenettes were lawful. In my lifetime, I have seen, in previous shortages of cycles and shortages of properties, the different wore a different hat. As a property manager and as a licensee in charge of a sales office and property management office, where you saw these makeshift kitchenettes, and I'd say we're going to be seeing a rebirth of those, where you've literally got your barbecue gas bottles and rooms set up as with these makeshift kitchenettes in order to get an extra income in order to keep up with the with the repayments of the mortgages. So, the nature of the people that are coming into Australia are in a way used to this sort of lifestyle anyway. So to them, it's nothing abnormal. For our standards, obviously it's a lot different. But this is the stuff that people are doing, and they're accommodating. People in the garages, and we're going to see a lot more of that because now they can get away with it. And in a way, the regulators are turning a blind eye to all this. It's only until we start hearing and being more aware of the actual catastrophes by way of people that are going to be brutally injured or as a consequence of these practices. It's not until then that. People are going to be making real changes. But until that happens, nothing's going to change, Martin. nothing's going to change. And as you say, and as I've been saying for a lot, for a while now, for a number of years, is there's nothing substantive, in my opinion, in Dusty and Evan's opinion, you know, in our team's opinion, that would make us believe that the Sydney market is going to go backwards, regardless of what websites you listen to and what data they publish out, what happens on the ground at grassroots level, and the different groups of people that are moving the dynamics, so they're moving the dynamics of the property purchase by being investors or owner occupiers or how things are moving. It's not showing any signs of relenting, and more broadly, because of what they do and the way that they're moving is based on government policy that they themselves can see that nothing's really going to change for the next 5 to 7 years. As I said before, and I go on record again to say, is that I'm a believer that the Labor government will get into power again next time around, and that because just prior to the election they'll start ranting on about dialing back on the negative gearing and dialing back on CGT, capital gains tax, and all this stuff, because it's a feel good story, but with no real intent to change anything, and that's going to persuade even a lot of conservatives to vote for that, because it seems to be the quickest way to get the young people into property, which is a lot of mothers in the conservative bloc are going to believe and are going to vote for that. And guess what? Only to then be smacked in the teeth once again post election, because they're going to do totally the opposite, because you can't afford to, right now we can't afford to have our property prices to go back. So I don't see any changes for at least 5 to 7 years.
Absolutely. No, it's just very concerning. And I would say, when you're connection is a bit wonky at the minute, so we might not keep this too much longer tonight. Obviously a bit more busy this time of night perhaps than earlier when we record, but I will just make a couple of points. You mentioned under insurance and insurance premiums. There was this article saying that the risk of under insurance is getting more and more of a problem, because people just can't keep track with the higher costs of the insurance side of things. And I think that's very true. I'm seeing that in my surveys. More people are actually choosing to only do the minimum amount of insurance that they need to get the mortgage or whatever. But what I'm seeing is they're not riding the value up. So in other words, over time, the insurance is a problem, and that clearly is a difficulty potentially later. And the other interesting observation is that the costs of the rates from the council is another significant factor I see in my surveys, as is, of course, the fact that whilst interest rates have come down for some people, the actual cost of the average mortgage is rising. And the reason it's rising is simply because the average mortgage is still a lot bigger, because prices are hanging higher and people are chasing bigger amounts. And interesting observation there is, look carefully if you're a first-time buyer and you go for the government-backed scheme at what interest rate you'll actually get for your mortgage. Because I was talking to a lending underwriter the other day who made the point that you may not get a very good interest rate if you've only got the 5% deposit. And whilst it's guaranteed by the government, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to actually give you a better rate. So that's something to bear in mind. You might end up paying more than you thought for the mortgage component as we go forward. Now, just before I come back to you, Edwin, I want to do one other quick thing, and that is that in the chat earlier on, I had one request for a postcode piece of analysis, and I thought, well, what the heck, we can do that. So let me just cut to that now. So this was a postcode 2640, which was West Albury, and the story here was, this is based on my surveys to the end of August. You can see there that we have households of about 16,000 with a third, slightly more borrowing than not. you can see there that the rental stress is very high. The mortgage stress is quite high. Mostly properties are houses rather than units. Gross investment yield is positive at 3.4, but negative minus 0.9% from a net investment yield perspective. Average taxable income, about 87,000, giving a disposal monthly of around $5,600, with 32% going on the mortgage and 24% going on the typical rent. And you can see there that the projections ahead, based on my surveys, these are surveys and scenarios, not real, you know, predictions, shows there is potential for house prices to rise further over the next 2 or 3 years, in the best case. But if we get a recession, then maybe not. So there we go. That was just that, what I wanted to cover off. So everyone, as we come to the end of the show, your key point, I think, if I can sort of come back to it, no change of trajectory. We're going to see this continuing for some time. People need to be very careful and cautious themselves about what choices they make. Don't get swept up with all the social media stuff or the mainstream media stuff. Don't get swept up by simply saying, got to buy. If you don't buy, you'll never buy, sort of thing. That probably is simplified. And you've got to be careful because you've got to do due diligence. And like we keep saying, Edwin, the problem is often with due diligence, if you don't do it now, you repent at your leisure.
100%, Martin. And that is something that you just can't allow to not to spend a way of getting the professionals to participate in your journey, because the small amount that you're paying, will be, in a way, you're going to save a lot from what we're seeing and what people are actually, the amounts of money that people are actually throwing at properties without thinking or believing in the paraphernalia and the glossy magazines, the brushes that they get from the agents, and the glossy, the funky photos that they get or videos that they get on the listing portals. Reality paints a different picture, and it's going to be one that can bite you down the track. And we don't want to see that for our followers and our viewers, obviously, but just see it over and over again. So you can't let emotion override in due diligence.
Absolutely. Edwin, well, I'm afraid that your audio is definitely getting strangled, so I'm going to draw a close here. But thank you very much for coming on this evening. I'll look forward to doing our normal recorded rant next Monday, and we'll try and finesse the audio for that. But I think you made some really, really important points for us. Thank you for coming on. And just to say that for those interested, there will be another show on Thursday. I'll be live streaming at 8 p.m. on Thursday with Chris Bates. And again, what I want to get his specific mortgage broker view of the government scheme. And then next Tuesday, B Wright's coming on. As I said earlier on, B Wright wrote a very, very interesting article. Didn't get picked up much in the media, but there were some really important points. He argued that there's a trap going on here that people need to be very careful about. So we'll explore that next Tuesday as well. So Edwin, thank you very much for spending some time with us on this Tuesday evening. Great to be able to get our rant down anyway. And I'm going to take you offline now. Have a great evening.
Good man. All the best.
Cheers. And thank you for staying with us and for sharing your thoughts. You may have noticed that the chat wasn't working as normal. That was because for some reason the chat app wasn't actually working as I expected. But thank you very much to Jason for the super chat. Really appreciate it, Jason. Thank you as always. And hopefully by next week I'll have a new fiber connection here as well. We'll get the chat back as well. Fingers crossed, but you never know with this technology stuff. So it is what it is. But thank you very much for spending some time on this Tuesday evening with us. And I'm just trying to try and make that. There you go. Jason, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And before I go, of course, the doggies. Yes, the doggies are here. They hardly moved other than when the bin was collected, which created a bit of local noise. So there we go. Right, it's going to be time for another walk. That's the next thing on my agenda. So thank you very much. Spend some time with us this evening. Take care. have a good week, and check out the recorded shows. I finished the classic series. I'll be back to live shows now. The studio's back and running and working okay. Have a good evening. We'll see you next time. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics signing off. Take care. Bye-bye.